This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
This is Megan Urquhart from Beach Bungalow 8.
And this is Joni Webb with Cote de Texas.
And today on the Skirted Roundtable, we are going to be talking about the news that broke yesterday, the sad news that Metropolitan Home Magazine is the latest in the increasingly long line of shelter magazines, and shelter magazines that have been around a long time, that are going under. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about that. And Megan, you said you had found some really, really interesting information about the sort of history of Metropolitan Home Magazine.
Well, I did. You know, I didn't know the whole background of Metropolitan Home. I didn't realize that when it started, it was really more akin to, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ready Made magazine. Ready Made is, I would guess their audience is more people, I'm guessing, in their mid-20s. It's sort of a like an apartment therapy almost. It's a lot of do-it-yourself sort of thing. So I actually was on Ready Made's website, and they had a post that was going back through the history of Metropolitan Home. And it originally, in 1969, it was launched as a special interest for Better Homes and Gardens, a special interest, one issue, big page format magazine called Apartment Ideas. And the whole purpose of it was sort of how to live in a small space and, you know, do it yourself. This was during the time when sort of all Mother Earth sort of whole earth catalog, that sort of period in time. So it was for people who were apartment living. And then they renamed it. They made it, it was so popular that about 4 years later in 73, they made it a quarterly magazine and renamed it Apartment Life. And again, that was proved to be really popular. So a few more years later, a few more years go by, and they are now doing it bi-monthly. And they put a slogan under it, Liberty and the Pursuit of Happiness, Apartment Life. So, and it just did increasingly really well. It had a monthly circulation of 800,000. And eventually Dorothy Callens became editor-in-chief. And she's the one who is really known for making the magazine more of an elegant, giving it a more elegant spin. And she did so by, you know, taking it from that kind of bohemian farming life, how to farm inside your apartment and out. I'm not really sure what that was all about, but she took it and she started putting the celebrities of the day on, like Michael Douglas and Robin Williams. And she also added a section that was a food section called A New American Cuisines, which again proved really popular. And so they actually did a cookbook, which I'm sure you could probably locate on eBay. And then, so by the time late 70s, they started doing things like the cooking section, and that's when they started the high-low, you know, the high-low part of the magazine, where they take a high-end room, they break it down price-wise, and then they recreate it for less expensive. And the one, they actually did a room and were able to do it for $12.74. Which,
wow.
I know. And that actually is my favorite part of Metropolitan Home. I've always loved that part. I think it's really interesting to see, you know, that you can take a room and recreate the whole feel and look of it for less. So at that time, and so it's the late 70s, and at that time Adweek was naming it one of the top 10 hottest magazines, and their ad pages increased 25%, and the revenues jumped, and so all was doing well. And that's about the time when they changed it over to the name Metropolitan Home. And so that was in 1980. And the really sad thing to note is that all those magazines, in Des Moines, Iowa, the publishers had all the archives, of course, you know, in probably boxes. And there was this horrible flood in 1993, and all those archives were destroyed. So anything that's out there would be, you know, magazines that people hung on to. And you can find back issues on eBay, I noticed, which I think I'm going to buy a few of them. I think they'd be really interesting just to check over. Very, you know, 70s and bohemian, but what fun to check it out. So that's when Metropolitan Home started, and that's where it all, those were the beginnings of it. It went from being this sort of, you know, bohemian, high-end magazine, 70s magazine, to what it is now, or what it was, unfortunately.
speaking of back issues, they've put out quite a few over the years, books that are compilations of their magazine. So if you do want to look at old issues, that would probably be the way to go. Go on Amazon and just Google Metropolitan Home, and they're pretty good books.
Their images have always been gorgeous, you know? I mean, being the sister magazine of Elle Decor, you know, of course they've got just such, I know as bloggers, a lot of us have used their photos, you know, for our posts.
Yeah, the photos, the photography has always been beautiful, even if the style wasn't quite my thing. I would say that they seemed, I know for a while it seemed like, even if you're more traditionalist, there were a lot of things in there that were, you know, could be incorporated into a more traditional, or they had them, because Metropolitan doesn't absolutely denote modern, you know, you can be classic and live in the city. But they definitely were getting, you know, a little more, I don't know what the word is, avant-garde's not quite the word, but...
Eclectic.
And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, especially after talking with Margaret last week and her talking about how they, you know, they've always run such a tight ship, and you assume the Metropolitan Home was in the same position, you know, that they were owned by the same company, and so the same fiscal conservatism was run through the whole company. So it's interesting why, you know, Elle Decor would be, you know, more successful at raising advertising dollars than a Metropolitan Home, other than Elle Decor has managed to skirt the two, you know, the avant-garde forward thinking plus the traditional. And maybe that's the appeal.
Yeah, I don't know why Elle, it's funny because there's, you know, I don't want to, you know, kick the magazine when it's down, but I have to say I was trying to find my recent issue of Metropolitan Home, and I save the ones that I love as I do with, you know, any of my magazines. And I have three from this year that I saved. And that makes me think, you know, I was trying to think, what did I do with the most recent issue? I generally, because I get so many magazines, I flip through them. And if one is not appealing to me, I toss it pretty quickly, just because I don't want it stacking up. And I don't know what it was that wasn't capturing me. Like Elle Decor is able to always capture me. I don't know what the, you know, I'm not, like Linda, what you were saying, I'm not sure what was lacking there, or if there, you know, maybe I'm alone in that feeling.
I think it's a very young, I think it appeals maybe to a young single people starting out, and it gives them, you know, a look to strive for. Of course, it's very expensive, so it's not really
accessible.
But it's like the clothes in Vogue. I mean, those clothes are not for the people that can afford them, you know? So I think it's the same thing. And that may be what you think.
That's an interesting corollary, yeah.
Metropolitan Home, to me, there was very few articles or features that ever spoke to me. But I'm sure that's obvious. But I do think it was a first-rate publication.
Yeah. But I guess what I was just responding to was what Linda was saying, that it's interesting that Elle Decor can encompass the same things, but it reads differently, and I'm not sure what that is.
Well, you know, maybe it is that in this day and age, a publication that has a broader wider appeal, you know, and that it's got something in there for the modernists and it's got something in there for the traditionalists. So, for instance, on two ends of the spectrum, we have Southern Accents. And then now we have Metropolitan Home, both of whom had very targeted demographics and design styles, and, you know, they couldn't survive, whereas Elle Decor seems to be sort of straddling in the middle and is doing well. And Domino was very much on one side, you know. If maybe we look at these, maybe that's the telling thing, is that the marketplace at the moment can't sustain targeted design styles.
You're probably right, because I don't know why. I mean, their magazines are so cheap, to have the subscriptions are so cheap, you know. It's $15, $12 for a year.
Right, but it's not the mag, but it's not the subscribers that keep the magazines. No. And that's what Margaret was saying last week about, you know, you can't take a cab across New York for what you can pay for an entire year of a magazine subscription. And so,
right, it's the production. It's the cost behind the production of the magazine. Keeping the magazines being as beautiful as they are is expensive. Right. You know, the shoots are expensive.
And
getting back to Linda, what you were saying, AltaCorp always seems to have an kind of like an ethnic bent to it, or a vibe in a one or two features. I never got that feeling from Metropolitan Home. It was always kind of slick.
I think I think Elle's just doing, Elle DeCour's just doing that right now because everyone hates the word, but it's a little trendy right now. I mean, that's what's going on right now. You know, I don't know that that's what was going on 10 years ago.
With Elle DeCour?
But there is something, but I think that there is something more touchable and less cool and untouchable about Elle DeCour. You know, whereas Metropolitan Home does kind of have that sort of untouchable chrome slick feel to a lot of their spreads.
Right. But that's very appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, that style.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they have a huge, in this month, the November issue, they have the huge Kelly Wurstler spread. And now Kelly Wurstler has gone into a completely, you know, new design style, which is liked by some and disliked by many. But, you know, it's hers to...
It's a strong look. I mean, it's a very definitive.
Oh, it's a strong look.
She's doing her own thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what that thing is.
Well, I agree with you, Joni. there's not much in these pages of her spread that I would find remotely, personally appealing or even want to be in the rooms.
Yeah, but I do want to say this. Going back to the history of Metropolitan Home, how long... It's been 26 years, correct? Mm-hmm. Or 25?
As Metropolitan Home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was in my late 20s when apartment therapy, and I used to love that magazine. For years, I loved the beginning of it because I was young, I was single, and I did live in an apartment. And it did speak to me. So I did have that affection for it early on.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the line.
What magazines were around at that time that would have been equal? Probably nothing, really, right? I mean, Architectural Digest.
House and Garden.
House and Garden,
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But as far as if you're in your 20s, what magazines would have spoken to you and would have been realistic? You know, that was during the whole divorce boom, too. There are a lot of single moms out there, you know, who really wanted great-looking apartments. And, you know, I bet that was hugely appealing, that whole... And, you know, it's funny saying that. I read somewhere that... Do you remember that movie, The Goodbye Girl?
Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason. Apparently, when she's redoing her apartment, she's looking at apartment life as her inspiration for her apartment when she's redoing it. Mm-hmm. So I guess,
that's
you know.
Funny.
Well, I also think there's probably the rise of women in the workplace where independent women who could get, single girls who were actually moving out of their parents' house, you know, getting married later. That's the trend of the professional girl getting married later and then moving into their own apartments. So that probably mirrored the divorcee group as well.
I think that's why Domino did so well and had so many really...
Yeah, but you're right, Megan. Apartment living or life or whatever it was used to be like Domino in a way.
Yeah.
You know, very similar. But y'all, I do have to say that the cover this month is strikingly beautiful. I don't know what it is.
A Metropolitan Home?
Don't y'all love the cover?
A Metropolitan Home?
Yes.
No.
Oh my God, I love it.
I had actually just said to Megan when you were up on the other call that I didn't like the cover.
I would never do this, and I would never have it, and I would never own it, and I would never sell it. But there's just something visually about the cover that I think is beautiful. With the black and the gold and the white and the, I don't know, I just love it.
It didn't appeal to me. I also, the mailing label is like perched right in front of the table on my copy, which is annoying.
So was the one from July and August.
Yeah. So it cuts off the whole, if I were whoever, I don't know who, off the top of my head, who did that design, but I wouldn't have been happy that my cover was...
Rectangle right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I know, that was kind of funny.
You know, it loses something. I will say, however, as far as spreads in the magazine, the Dixie Chick spread, that place is fantastic. Like, that to me is a Metropolitan Home.
What page is it on?
Page 82. It starts, it's a one of those Dixie Chick girls. Emily Robinson's.
Isn't it in Texas?
Robeson. Sorry.
It's in San Antonio, isn't it?
Yeah, San Antonio Loft.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that place is fabulous. That to me is a place that I would look at and go, gosh, I wish I, you know, I'd live there. Totally not my design style, but I'd live there in a heartbeat. So, yeah, I think it is interesting if we look at the magazines and what seems to be working, you know, and I don't think any of us actually know. I wonder if they know. You know, it's one of those things where people are just like, they're working so hard.
I think you're right, though. I think that people just in general are in this mindset of paring down and being a little bit more efficient, and whether, you know, magazines can sometimes be a luxury item. So maybe people are just, you know I can get everything I want with Elle Decor.
But again, it's not about the subscribers. It's about the advertisers. So what about it? What about the advertisers? You know, it's obvious there has to be the expense side of the equation, which is, as Margaret said, mm-hmm. they've always kept things extremely frugal. You know, they've been a frugal publication, so they can withstand the downturn. And certainly they've had a downturn. They're not at their high either, but they're not mm-hmm. as low as other people. And I wonder what it is about the magazine that makes those advertisers feel that it's still worth putting their dollars into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it does have to do with readers, obviously. If there are no subscribers and no one's reading, then why would an advertiser advertise? But they always say it's about the advertisers.
But it does, right. It does say, I mean, I do remember that when Domino folded, that was the main thing, was that the production cost was just so high to produce such a quality, you know, magazine, that it was difficult to sustain.
I wanted to ask Margaret about that last week, but I just didn't have the nerve, you know. I wanted to ask her.
You did, didn't you?
No, about what,
Joni? I wanted to talk figures, like how much is a photo shoot?
You know, I'll tell you guys, you know, people bandy about these enormous numbers. And
right.
I was
like,
talking, and I don't know how accurate those numbers are, to be honest, because I was talking to a photographer, a professional photographer, and was talking to him about that specific thing. And I said, you tell me, what do you think a photo shoot on location is going to cost? And these $50,000 numbers, he was like, that's obscene. You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've heard all kinds of rumors. And,
yeah.
15, you know, they were supposedly from a great source. But.
Right. If they were spending $50,000, then they deserve to go out of business, quite frankly. You know, a day rate for a top-end photographer, maybe $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like someone like Deary Moore, $5,000 a day, is that all?
You know,
that doesn't seem right. Is that right?
I mean,
I think about my friends right now who are freelancing as creative directors, and they're making like $1,500 a day. And right. I mean, I know that's like advertising, but that, you know, it seems like a photographer at that level that Joni's talking about would make a lot more.
Well, but $5,000 is a lot more than $1,500.
Well, I know, but it seems.
But
like
even
a
if
lot
he's
more.
Okay, but even if he's making $10,000. It's a day shoot, a 2-day shoot.
That's true.
You know, how do you get from five
or
10,000?
Yeah, where's the other
$30,000? Yeah, you know, even with travel, and I mean, that's, I think.
Well, you have to edit all the pictures, and you know.
Well, and how many people are you going to have on a shoot? Are you going to have 12 to 15 people on a shoot? And are you putting them up in great hotels?
But do you need to have 12 or 15 people on a shoot?
Yes,
I think that they do.
They do makeup, do hair.
Not always. Margaret said herself, they don't always do that.
Well,
fashion. It depends on the person in it. She said they prefer to have the person pick their own clothes.
Well, that was wardrobe. But they still do have, they will still have a stylist or
if
two.
The person,
Wait a minute. I want to say something. Layla Palmer, they just did a photo shoot for The Knot, okay? And there were so many people on the shoot. There were makeup people, hair people for both of them. You know, like one for her, one for her husband. They flew down a whole wardrobe for them. They had all these accessories were flown in. They had prop people. They had assistants. They had stylists. I mean, there was a huge crew for The Knot.
Oh,
it's
I know.
All
I
magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm you know, I've talked to some people, and I'm sure in different markets it's different, but not all publications have the people in them, so they obviously don't need hair, makeup, and wardrobe, you know, if the person themselves is not sitting in the pictures.
But I do think they are still, again, I mean, all my only reference that I know firsthand is advertising, you know, print shoots, and I mean, the amount of people that I mean, back in the day, you know, 2 years ago, they were my friends who were being brought on and being flown down from San Francisco and staying at Four Seasons. And I'm not really sure what they were doing, but they were here for 5 days and they were one of a big crew, you know, to shoot, you know, something about cat food. Right. You know, when I think about how many people were just on those shoots.
And I think, you know, it's possible that that's all just excessive. And that's the kind of thing that's going to have to go away. I know when I worked in public television, there were you know, shoots for the documentaries, and everybody was flying first class, and everybody's, and that eventually, you know, the producers and the PBS and the producing station started saying, you know what, you can't do that. You can't do it. Yeah. It's too expensive. It's a waste of money. It's not necessary. You know, there are certainly going to be some people that have to be put up in first class accommodations, but you know, the production assistant does not. So, you know, it's interesting. It would be interesting to know real numbers, because I think we're here.
And they always bring in craft services. You know, they're not running out and grabbing McDonald's or El Pollo Loco for everyone. They're bringing in a full spread,
right?
You know, and they're, you know, they're getting fed. You know, that there's just all those little incidentals that are being brought in that are excessive and not necessary. And I think that it does cost a lot to do a shoot, which is what we were originally talking about. Right. But I don't know the number, and I would love to know the actual number.
Going back to the magazine front, and speaking of magazines that started off as one thing and then became another, I got in the mail the new Lux magazine, Interiors and Design, mm-hmm. and I guess it's the new Western Interiors.
Well, I saw an issue of it last June or July. It's all by region, right?
Yes, because I looked it up online and they have different regions. And I'm not sure, the magazine I got does not suggest a region. Online they do. They seem to have different regions, but the one I got does not say a particular region. So maybe they have a general one.
What do you think of it? It's large format. It's a big...
It's large format. It's beautiful.
Perfectly
picture.
Bound.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, big, yeah, big, heavy,
it's
heavy,
a
heavy.
Magazine.
You know, the cover price says $9.95. Yeah. The annual subscription price, they said $19.95 for four issues. They're putting out four issues.
Right?
Yeah.
The regional in my area has a feel of a showcase home magazine a little bit. The houses are always just so flamboyantly overdone.
I don't think it's particularly appealing, to be quite honest. I think it's it's too much. It's too show housey.
You know, the issue I saw,
separate.
the thing that I was a little surprised about, they had I think it was the cover. I need to be able to look this up to reference it before I think it was on the cover. There was a vase that had the lilies that are really fragrant, the big white ones, and they were all closed. You know what I mean? Which isn't as pretty. And I couldn't figure out why would they do that. It was sort of like someone last minute thought to get the flowers rather than getting them the day before so they'd open. And I just thought, well, that seems like an afterthought but the good thing was, what I loved about it was they did have some articles about a little bit more, not mainstream designers, sort of a little more indie. And I appreciated that in the mix of everything. So I did like that aspect of it. But I was sort of surprised at one of the shoots, which was a pretty big shoot, it didn't seem as thought out as it maybe should have been.
It just seems very hands-off. There's nothing personal in these pictures. You know,
you know what? I bought it this month, the new issue, looked at it in the car, and tossed it.
Yeah.
There's just nothing of interest.
Yeah,
isn't that awful?
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of a kitchen on page 132, if anyone has the magazine. And, you know, basically the styling is a few bowls of apples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's a cutting board with, like, two apples. No knife, no nothing else by it. So, yeah, it's just very pristine and very, you know...
Very cold. It looks like they're trying to sell the house.
Yes.
It's like the houses are for sale.
Yeah, it's exactly what it looks like, Joni. So I don't really have a whole lot of hope for this I mean, it's a beautifully produced publication, you know.
Good in the hand.
This took the place of Western Interiors.
Yep.
Why?
I know.
Well, maybe they're trying to spread themselves too thin if they are doing regional. You know, because after I saw that one issue, I wanted to see what else they had going on. And I did go online, and it was a little hard to navigate their online website. Did you think so?
Well, Western Interiors was an excellent product.
It was.
Yeah. Oh, I love the feel of the paper.
Why would they go to this, you know?
Well, I guess I'm not sure. This company bought out Western Interiors and then rebranded it as this magazine. So maybe this Lux magazine was what was already being produced, and they just took over their mailing list. But yeah, I liked Western Interiors a lot. I think they could have kept it the way it was and just rebranded the name, you know, taken out Western Interiors, because being from New England, I'd see it and be like, oh, what do I care? And then I'd look at it and be like, I love this. You know, I do care, actually.
But they had a future, you know.
This just seems like just one of those specialty publications that doesn't work its way into anyone's heart. There's no heart in this publication.
Is yours New England?
No, they don't have a New England region.
But is it mostly, are the features mostly New England?
No.
No,
they're not. There's nothing New England-y about this.
Well, then I might have to...
I don't think they have that many regions. The only reason why I'm getting this is because I had a, through this bulk subscription that I have, I had a Western Interior, so this is just what's come in its place. But this,
so if you already have a subscription to Metropolitan Home, I'm assuming, just like when Domino went under, you can get it. I don't know this, but do you guys know if you can write to the publisher and ask to get your subscription put onto another magazine?
They usually do put it onto another magazine. You just don't like what they've put it onto.
Right, you need to go on and actually select it.
Yeah, I'll have to call the place where I get all my magazines from. And
I mean, what magazines are you guys looking at now? I'm trying to think what am I excited about? The House Beautiful, of course, and El Decor. But
well, that's the thing is that, like, I have this bulk subscription where it was supposed to be 8 or 10 magazines a month, and you know, I'm running out of magazines. Sending me Vogue, and I have no interest in reading Vogue.
I get Glamour magazine. When was the last time you looked at Glamour magazine?
Yeah.
Karen Carroll emailed me the other day, and I told her, I said, you know, it's so silly to say this, but I'm not over it. This magazine thing we're going through has really changed my life. I used to drive around twice a week, 3 times a week, pull into the bookstore waiting for an issue of something, you know, and I'd leave with 20 magazines. I mean, I was the magazine queen.
Yeah.
And I don't go there anymore.
I know.
There's no reason to.
I wonder what's going on in the foreign magazine market, because actually...
Well, that's the only reason. Yeah. Once a month I'll go to pick up, because I actually take the coat.
Gorgeous.
The coat, the suds, all the coat suds. I take those online. So I take those digitally.
I don't know how you do that. I can't do that.
Well, I like it because I like it for my blog. But the British magazines used to be digitally. They're not anymore.
Interesting.
So that's only reason I go now to buy two magazines, British Home and Gardens and British World of Interiors, you know. It's sad.
Do you ever look at the Architectural Digest from different countries? They're beautiful. Gorgeous.
Better than here?
A lot of times they're the same recycled AD.
I don't, you know what? They're hard to find, but if you do come across them, check them out because they're great.
Interestingly, Rhonda Carmen had mentioned yesterday on Facebook we were talking about Metropolitan Home. She actually made a comment about not really being sure what's happening in the American market because the British magazine seemed to be doing really well, and she was kind of like positing why other than they're more frugal.
I think that covers are so important. And I don't know, a lot of times I would look at covers of magazines. I look at covers and I go, why did they use this picture? You know, why? And not understand it. And I don't know. I think I just question sometimes the judgment, you know?
Isn't that why Margaret was saying they used the cover of the new book was because it was their most popular cover? I mean, they used that image on the cover of the new book.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Elgin Forest covers.
No, but in general, I'm
agreeing with you. It is crucial to the sale of the magazine that they bring, right. You know, you want to bring the audience in. You want people to grab it, like you said, with the new issue of Metropolitan Home. You want people to feel that, like you did, you know, it appeals to them, so they want to take a closer look, open up the insides,
right.
Buy it.
Right. And I think that what Margaret was saying, you know, kind of like they don't really know. You know, what appeals to you in the studio is... They couldn't really explain why that Victoria Hagen is why that one cover was such their bestseller.
But when you see it that you like it. And there are covers that I just have hated, or they were boring, or I didn't understand them. You know, and I was like, why did you pick up all the pictures in the magazine? Why did you pick this on the cover? And I guess that goes back to being a good editor. And, you know, I wrote... yesterday, tongue in cheek, about Margaret Russell, you know, on my blog, and I said, "Thank God for Margaret Russell."
That was tongue in cheek.
No, well, I mean, thank God for a human being, you know. But honestly, people were saying, "Thank God for Elder Core," and I said, "Actually, it's thank God for Margaret Russell because yeah. I really think she is the talent." Behind the magazine.
And you know, one thing I was thinking, and I don't know if this is there's any corollary between this, but who are the magazine editors in chiefs that we really know of?
Well, I was just going to say Stephen Drucker. He has changed that magazine. It's fabulous.
Right. But mm-hmm. what I'm saying is that who are the magazine editors that everybody seems editors in chief that seem to be personally known to people? Margaret Russell, Stephen Drucker, and those magazines are still around. Donna Warner of Metropolitan... Wait a minute, let me talk. Donna Warner of Metropolitan Home, does anyone really know who she is by name? I mean, really know?
By sight.
By sight, by name, by... Yeah, I mean, like, really...
So I think it just goes to show, again, I'm not saying the big praises of blogging and that sort of thing, but there's something about having the people know you personally and then wanting to buy your product, feeling more involved in your product. And I think that because these people have been public and put themselves out there and we've gotten to know them as people, so to speak, you know, a personality.
Yeah.
It does make you, you know, the person behind the effort.
Right. And I'm just wondering in general, what is there a corollary there? I mean, Southern Accents, you know, that was a huge regional publication and certainly extended beyond the region. It didn't extend all over the place because it didn't really have any name recognition on the street here in New England.
I loved it more after speaking with her because I just went, oh, that woman is just amazing. I mean, you got to know her, and it just...
And this is not to say that any of these other people are not amazing. It's just that I find it striking that the publishers, the editors-in-chief that we really seem to know of, those are the magazines still hanging around.
Yeah, I wonder.
I know, but that could just be they like publicity, they have good PR, or, you know, who's to judge... Whether the editor of Cottage Living, that was a fabulous magazine, okay? And now she's at Southern Living trying to change it. God bless her.
I don't think it's a judgment, actually.
Yeah, it's not a judgment.
I don't think that we're judging. I think it's just, like she said, there's possibly a correlation. I just think it's an interesting...
It's interesting.
Who knows? I mean, they're obviously all extremely talented at what they do.
And passionate. And I mean, Donna Warner had been there 26 years. I mean, she was like Margaret Russell. She'd been in that magazine. I mean, this is a devastating thing for those people.
Oh, my God. It's so mean. You know, it's just mean, I think.
And where are they going? You know, there's so few magazines now. Where are all these people going for jobs? You know, where is there for them to go?
When you think about it, there's very few successful. I mean, there's Hearst, right? Is that Elder Core?
No, that's Hatchett Filippacci.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's House Beautiful, and there's Meredith.
Yeah.
Who does, you know, Sharla Lahan was the editor in, I think, the managing, wait, she might have been the editor. What was she? She had something to do with apartment living back in. in the 70s, and now she's in Style Magazine's managing editor. I think she was the editor at Apartment Living, or Apartment Life, sorry, back in the 70s. So they do move around, for sure.
But now there's just no place for them to move around to.
Right.
I mean, you know, In Style is not exactly a shelter magazine. It has a shelter section. But yeah, you just wonder where these the really talented people, everybody from the editor-in-chief on down, are landing at this moment. Anywhere, you know, where is there for them to go?
Was it cheaper to do these shoots back in the 70s, in the late 70s? I mean, they had a staff of 45 people did this Apartment Life when it was at its, you know, right before it became Metropolitan Home. Doesn't that seem like a lot more than what we've, what was Southern Accents? She said 12, yeah. 13.
Well, and also Elle Decor, Margaret made a point of saying how lean and small their staff was.
Right.
Why was it so much cheaper to do shoots back then, to produce a magazine?
Everything is more expensive now. I mean, digital is probably more expensive.
Advertising's more expensive, though. It seems like everything would go up.
Yeah, I don't know. Or they just were leaner. I mean, they may have had a lot of people, but a lot of those people probably didn't get paid a lot.
And, right.
You know, they weren't traveling first class. You know, a lot of that kind of stuff, oh, I have to have this, I have to have that. You know, that kind of grows. And if
you look at these Apartment Life shoots, like if you ever go on eBay and look at these magazine covers, they're hilarious. I mean, just the floral arrangements to the really, they don't even look necessarily lit well, you know?
Well, I think that's the other thing is the production quality has, digital has made the need for things to be styled and done to the nth degree. Like the TV anchors on television are all freaking out because high def TV, suddenly they can't really hide behind makeup anymore. You know, every flaw on the face has shown up, and I think that's
right.
The same thing.
Right.
Print production
right.
has really risen, raised the bar as far as, you know, the need for the actual shoot, or the photoshopping has gotten really expensive, one or the other.
So there aren't many left. Who's next? Who's going to be next?
I don't know.
Any predictions?
Architectural Digest?
Architectural Digest.
Are they hurting?
I mean, I think they're all hurting. And you know, there seems to be such an antipathy towards Architectural Digest that it's hard to imagine. I mean, nobody seems passionate about it the way people are passionate about, well, now, Elle Decor and House Beautiful. You know, as far as who...
Some of the blogs have actually really ripped on it.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's
so sterile.
It's very sterile. And when Domino went out, you know, because people started getting Architectural Digest because that's the same, you know, people started getting Architectural Digest as their substitute subscription, and they were like, I don't want this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who could imagine that the reader of Domino would be the same reader of Architectural Digest?
No.
I mean, they're just not. So,
I don't know. That's my prediction.
I would say...
What?
That it's Architectural Digest. I mean, I hate to say that, but yeah, that's what I would think.
I wonder how long Southern Living is going to hold out. What is left?
Well, that's
the thing. What I was saying. When you get your magazines now, what I mean, besides, you know, the ones that we all covet, which House Beautiful and Elle Decor, what are the other ones you get so excited about getting anymore? Or when you go to the bookstore and you go through all the... I was just at the bookstore yesterday.
Veranda. I must tell you, this issue, I don't think there was one Southern Home. They've left, like Karen Carroll said, they've given up that tie to the South.
Yes, they've gone national.
Yeah, it made me very sad. But that's it.
Well, there's room. Yeah. Maybe after we get through this little period, there's going to be, you know, a tabula rasa for, you know, a fresh slate where someone can come in and plant the seeds and start anew.
Yep.
It might be sort of like a forest fire, you know? It might be necessary in order for new growth to happen.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Coat to Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We always appreciate your emails and comments and suggestions. And you can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.